You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 134, Thursday, April 11th. And Steve, here we are talking about waiver wire starting pitchers because what else could we possibly need? It seems like the entire industry has been in the dumps, and understandably so, for a week. But, you know, we're a weekly show, so we got to keep the vibes high over here. And we're talking about how we can try our best to replace some of these guys as much as you can try to replace a Spencer Strider or a comeback player of the year in Shane Bieber. Or for me, Steve, whose SP1 and 2 on a reliever-heavy strategy was Framber Valdez and Nick Pivetta. Luckily, it looks like those two don't have as bleak of an outcome or outlook as some of the others. But yeah, wow, here we are, guys. And it's about 2.5 weeks into the season, and we are desperate to backfill. So today, that's of course, going to be our focus. We're going to talk about some stuff to look for and some, of course, names that we like and would recommend. We'll do the deep dive. But Steve, how's it going, man? Are you stumbling through the season already?
It's good. It's good. I drafted my pitchers injured, so I'm good. I drafted like Senga, who just got moved to the 60-day IL. I got ahead of it, you know. That meme where the guy's pointing at his head, like, your pitchers can't get hurt if they're already injured. Mm. There's definitely been, like, it seems like the whole baseball world has just, like, been put on pause over the last 5 to 6 days just with all these injuries that have happened. And I don't want to get, like, too much into it. There's been plenty of podcasts about just, like, the state of the game and how to fix it. I know Rates and Barrels did one on Tuesday. Nick and Pollock and Paul Spohr did one on the Fireside Chat. That was great. Nick referenced Ben Lindbergh's amazing article on it, on the pitchers' injuries. Jeff Passan wrote one. Like, everyone wrote about these pitchers' injuries has talked about it. I don't want to get into, like, that whole meta conversation, which is good, but, you know, we don't have, like, the sources
it's not what the people are here for.
Yeah, exactly. But what I will say quickly on that is that I don't know if it's, like, just looking at a lot of the numbers in the charts, and I don't have them right in front of me, but the actual number of Tommy John surgeries that happen in this time of the year, it's pretty much in line with what's been happening since, like, 2014. And why 2014 was an important date to mark is that that's when a lot of pitch tracking data became available to teams. So guys started chasing that velocity, chasing spin. And basically since then, the number of Tommy Johns that happens, like, from spring training to April, are around the same. Like, sure, there's some spikes here and there, and there may be more. I think it's the names that have gone down recently this year that make it stand out. But also, what I will say, like, if Tommy John didn't exist, then, like, yes, it's a problem, and a lot of these guys are getting it. But also, without it, we would have never even gotten Spencer Strider because he's already had a Tommy John. If Spencer Strider came up 20, 30 years ago, sure, he wouldn't be throwing as hard. But if he had this elbow injury, he would have never made it to the big leagues past that. Like, before this was, like, a common procedure, guys just blew out their elbows and that was it, and they were done. So, like, there's like a, you know, there's two sides to the coin, essentially. But
yeah,
it is crazy what's going on. And I think something needs to happen as far as, like, incentivizing guys to not throw at their max all the time to prevent these injuries. What that is, I think the best idea I've heard is tying the starting pitcher to the DH to sort of encourage guys to throw 6 to 7 innings. So that, you know, in order that, if they keep that in mind, it'll be, you know, hey, I'm not going to throw 5 innings at my hardest. I'm going to tone it down a little bit and make sure I get to the 6th or 7th. But as I said, I don't want to get into all this. I want to talk about the replacements and what we're going to do to solve our pitching, our quench our thirst for pitching with all these injuries. I got into it a little bit, so apologies for that. But
good,
excited
Steve.
To talk about some arms that we could look at to replace these injured guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting topic. I appreciated hearing where your head was at too. Mm-hmm. My closing thought on it is, I think it's not just TJ. I think I saw a stat that it was like right now 60 sure. players are on the IL with either forearm or elbow, which is like, it's too much. Something's gotta give in that manner. And you know, obviously it's all of these factors combined, not just, you know, pitch clock in a vacuum or anything. But when you zoom out, baseball has chapters, right? And it's like, when you think of the game over 10, 20, 30 years, a lot of big things kind of move the goalposts. And this does seem like something that's serious enough, big enough, and prevalent enough to where I would absolutely bet on this being one of those things that shifts. And it seems like the attention it's getting is because of how prominent it is and how serious it is. So, yeah, it's something that we'll just have to see. There's a lot of people who are going to be spending more time and expertise on it than we can offer on this show. So, shifting to the stuff that we're looking at, Steve, I know we got a variety of things, and it's stuff that we've talked about on the show for 3 years running, but we're going to talk about Stuff Plus guys. We're going to talk about K-minus BB, which, you know, year over year is tried and true at kind of identifying some breakouts. We're looking, ironically, at velocity gainers, some people who are bringing in some new arsenal pitches. And then in the meantime, also some streamers and some guys that look like they might have found themselves in a role with increased playing time, increased volume, where they have the opportunity to break out. And that's the type of stuff that, you know, whether it's Bryce Elder last year, that, you know, there's always these moments that even a JP France where you kind of, you might not even love the pitcher, but when they get in a circumstance, it can add some really kind of glue value for the back of your rotations. That said, Steve, jump in if you disagree, but last year it felt like, and I know we're just 2.5-3 weeks in, but it felt like those fab runs were just bankroll busters where there were $300 bids and everything. And like now, even with some all these injuries so prevalent, wow, I have yet to really feel like there's, I mean, the Garrett Crochet was a big one very early on, but to me it seems like you almost have to squint, like even going through this rundown and looking at streamers, like to me there, it seems like there's even relievers that are at the top of that ad board. So do you disagree with that, or where are you at? Because part of me feels like we haven't found some of the biggest ones that we need to pounce on. So is this more of an exercise of trying to get out ahead of it and grab them 2 weeks before they go off? Or where do you think at, or what are you thinking with this overall list of guys? Because no one's really jumping off the page for me.
I mean, there'll be a big one this weekend in Jackson Holliday, right? If he was, but I'm sure he was stashed in a lot of leagues.
Yep.
There was a chance that he was going to make the roster. But yeah, I think you're right. Like it's been like Jason Foley, I'm sure. You know, you saw a lot of big bigs on him. And the guys that have been interesting, some guys that we'll talk about, like
interesting,
like Corey,
for sure.
Like Corey Bradford and Ronel Blanco. Like Bradford was, is he going to be in the rotation once Lorenzen comes back? Then with Blanco, it's like, yeah, he threw a no-hitter, but Verlander's coming back, and like the stuff isn't amazing, and he's like not a you know, he wasn't a top 30 prospect or anything like that. Even for like the Astros, I'm sure he was on there, but pretty low. He wasn't like a top end prospect, or definitely not on like a top 100 list. He was closer to 30 as far as age wise, right? So there's been like holes to poke in all of these names. So that's kind of why, you know, I think that
you got to dig in.
You got to dig in, and like what I joked about with that tweet that I sent you and that inspired this title from Sean Becker. It's the, I'm a sucker for a good Moneyball meme, but it was like, you know, he tweeted out, how, you know, a guy, he was consoling a friend after a breakup and saying, "I won't find anyone as good as her." And then me, just finished watching Moneyball, will recreate her in the aggregate. Like, that's what you have to do, essentially, if you have one of these pitching injuries. There may not be this end-all, be-all, throw $300 on a guy. Like, there's no one that I would do for a pitcher this weekend. Like, even if Bradford's still out there, and I know he's shoving, but it's first the A's tonight, I wouldn't be comfortable throwing a third of my waiver wire budget on that. Like, I would try and find some of these guys that were talked about that are strong in one or two of these metrics that we like to look at early in the season and hope to ride it out. Like, you know, you mentioned Bryce Elder last year. Like, yeah, he was people were rightfully fading him and saying it was unsustainable. But if you rostered him from April to June, you did pretty good. Like,
right,
he was,
right.
You know, like, sure.
He accumulated,
You know. Yes, you were. Everyone was right that the wheels were going to fall off eventually, at some point in the season. But there was also, you know, a point basically up until the All-Star break where he was a good fantasy pitcher, and like, you know, you didn't pick him up because of X, Y, and Z, but you missed decent results despite the fact they weren't sustainable. So you kind of have to hold your nose at some of these guys that we'll talk about. But there's some reason. There's reason for every single one of these names that we'll talk about that are worth an ad to replace these guys, because the chances are you probably have someone on your wire or someone injured and you need to look at someone on your waiver wire to add someone there.
Or at the very least, if not an ad, worth an assessment, worth a watch list, because they're just
worth a stream, something.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah. Exactly. We've said it for years on the show, like, stream and see what happens. And that's usually what these guys are, right? So let's start with the ones we've kind of bucketed this by the category that we're looking at. And Stuff Plus is the one that we pulled up to start us out. So this is a leaderboard of Stuff Plus, and we're basically just looking at guys that are widely available that stood out. So, Steve, you threw Keaton Wynn on here, who is with the San Francisco Giants, high ground ball guy, and also a split finger which the Giants, you kind of look at that and you're like, okay, they did it with Kevin Gausman. It worked out. Keaton Wynn so far is 0-2, but he's had a pretty tough slate with a road matchup against the Dodgers and then also against the Padres. And on Friday, he goes at Tampa. So kind of a tough start to begin, but Keaton Wynn, his velo is up a little bit from what we saw last year. And next week, he's got the Marlins on the road. So I just, you know, I think that's how you have to view some of these guys, is like, okay, what's the next one I'm going to get and what am I looking forward to? So from your purview, what kind of things have you excited about Keaton Wynn, and how would you kind of diagnose this one for the listeners?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like, and it's kind of beyond some of the surface numbers, even though there are a few things to like. Like, it's just a 16.7% strikeout rate, a 9.5% walk rate, an ERA above 5.5. But he does throw 96, and he's got good stuff. That's why he's on this list. Couple that with the fact that he throws in a good ballpark. I think the Giants are also a good organization as far as developing pitchers like this. So if you take a quick look at his numbers, look at, anything that you would want to look at quickly, like swing, strike rate, CSW, any of the ERA indicators. I know that's not a great tool right now, but even like K percentage, something that's like a per at-bat metrics that may stabilize quickly at this point, even in just 11 innings. You're not going to find anything there, but he does have some pretty, pretty impressive stuff, starting with that fastball. So I think there's a lot to like about Keaton Wynn, despite some middling results to start.
Yeah, and the splitter is a 70-grade pitch on Fangraphs, mm-hmm. which gets your attention right away. On top of that, I know it was over just 58 innings in the minors in 2023, but during that time, what we saw was much more impressive with a 25% K rate. The walks are a little high at 9.9%, but, I mean, if you can get the control down a little bit, what you're looking for is a guy who's got two dominant pitches. And it's like you said, the 96 mile per hour fastball and then a 70 grade splitter is a great place to start. He also works in a slider as well as part of his pitch mix. So he's not like a two pitch pitcher or anything like that. 6'4", pretty big frame, just 26 years old. And like you said, the Giants have done this. And even right now, like, I don't know, when you look at the upcoming matchup, I just feel like there's, it's one of those that with a guy this promising in terms of the arsenal, I would only need to see one kind of breakout given the rest of the free agent pool for me to say like, okay, let's give it a shot. So yeah, I'm interested. I think this is a good one. I heard on the broadcast them talking about Keaton Wynn and had really good things to say about what the managers feel he can do. So yeah, I it's a name I knew before this rundown, and I was kind of surprised to see he had as rough of a couple outings as he's had, but I think there's plenty of room to turn it around.
So I didn't have this up before because I think the with the starts that happened over the last day, I don't think he was technically qualified with just 11 innings, but he's got a 131 stuff plus on the fastball and a 128 stuff plus on the slider. So stuff plus is a metric made by Eno Saris that grades out the characteristics, the pitch level characteristics, like not results, like how they move, the velocity, all that. And 100 is average with like a standard deviation of 10. So like 10 is a lot better. You know, 110 would be a plus pitch. So this is a 131 fastball, a 128 slider. That's not all the end all be all. Like we see like guys like Graham Ashcraft that have amazing, ridiculous eye popping numbers, for stuff plus with the fastball and slider specifically. But he also does have a 106 location plus, a 110 pitching plus. So he's able to locate the ball. He does have that splitter, which doesn't grade out well. But splitters are usually tricky in stuff plus models because there's a lot of like deception with arm movement and change of speeds. So he may have three plus pitches that he's able to locate well, and stuff plus stabilizes much more quickly in a sample size of just two starts rather than like that 5-6 ERA there. So I think there's a lot to like about Keaton Wynn, and especially if I had one of those big name injured pitchers and like wanted to take a long shot home run, like Keaton Wynn may be one of the names that I would reach out to first.
Yep. And just 2% rostered on Yahoo. So
yeah,
you can afford to watch list it for now. But yeah, if it is a deep or industry leagues like NFBC, that you might find a Keaton Wynn out there.
Yeah, I drafted Keaton Wynn and like he was
nice.
Going to be nice. A drop in a lot of my like weekly leagues. But I kind of held on to him despite like the results, just because the stuff's been so good over the last few weeks. So, like he was like I, you know, when I did my fab to start on like Tuesday or Wednesday, like he was a guy that I would drop. But then by Sunday, when I was finalizing it, I removed him from a guy that I was dropping. You know,
yeah,
that was probably because other guys got hurt and they were easier drops. But you know, I also
exactly
want to hold him. Yeah.
Well, to quickly talk about his teammate, the SP4 for the Giants is Jordan Hicks, and this is one who's rostered at a much higher clip at 74% Yahoo League, so we're probably talking 10-teamers, but just a note on the Stuff Plus standouts that Hicks is 7th overall on Stuff Plus, and you mentioned Ashcraft, Steve. I was laughing, put it in the rundown, that good results for Hicks, but not a lot of strikeouts, good Stuff Plus, and a fantastic spring of a lot of strikeouts. Hicks has reminded me a little bit of Ashcraft from last year. So I hope the wheels don't come off, because it has looked good, but without the swing and miss stuff that we were hoping would carry over from spring. He will also get the Marlins next week. And yeah, I mean, if Jordan Hicks is available, I think this is one you rush to add and figure out.
Yeah.
let yourself get burned, right?
Yeah, I don't think he's available. Like, at least in like the 15 teamers, and if like sure, there's 30% of Yahoo leagues that need to be rectified on that. That he should mm-hmm. be added in, but anything that it has a deeper than like 12 team, even 10 team, Hicks is going to be likely rostered. Gone.
Yeah.
Our boy TJ complaining about Hicks leaving St. Louis and figuring out how to pitch. I thought that was only outfielders that got better once they left St. Louis, but I guess it happens with
no. There's a long pitchers, list. Pitchers we've too. Assembled a full roster. Yeah, Zach Allen. There's a bunch that we've got. TJ, I don't know if you want to work on that in the meantime. And don't you worry. After your ad break is when we'll get the live read on the listener question there. But let's go to a guy who's rostered in about half of that. Of Jordan Hicks, and that's Spencer Turnbull, 38% in Yahoo leagues. And yes, that Spencer Turnbull that we've been talking about. And you mentioned Eno Saris. Eno's Spencer Turnbull, who he's been talking about for 5 years. He's not with the Tigers anymore. He's with the Phillies. And after two outings, it's looking real nice. 11 innings, 13 strikeouts, no earned runs. That was at St. Louis and home against the Reds. Yeah, Turnbull, what do you think here, Steve? Because when I saw it at first, I remembered we were excited about Turnbull. He's a guy who I believe is fresh off of a TJ, right? We lost him for a year and a half after we were all excited about him. And so I naturally went, looked under the hood, didn't love what I saw. Now, on Stuff Plus, he did pop out on the numbers, but the velocity is down big time on the four-seamer. He does have a new sweeper, which has been effective, but not like a wipeout in terms of swing and miss relatively to what you expect from sliders and sweepers. And he's got a curveball. I just, part of me wonders if I'm looking at this, are we seeing the surface numbers and getting more excited than what we should be under the hood? Or do you like this from Turnbull?
I think I'm a little more excited about Turnbull than you are. Okay. Maybe it is because Eno Saris has been in my ear for 5 years about Turnbull. Maybe it's because I rostered him in my home league during his no-hitter, so I'll always have a soft spot for him. I think he was hurt pretty quickly after that, which sort of goes to show you that it's ironic with the stress on the arms. If anyone goes like nine innings, like you automatically assume they may get hurt the next day or soon. But I think there's something here with the sweeper. It's not like the put away pitch, but it does get swing and misses, and he is able to put away guys with the sinker, curveball, even the change up and fastball. So it just gives him another option there. And he's basically like completely ditched the sinker, the slider this year. He's only thrown seven of them, five of them to righties. So the sweeper, he's comfortable using both to lefties and righties. Same with that four seamer. He has the change up and curveball he could throw to lefties too. So I think that there is like a bit of hold potential here with Turnbull. The Phillies have done a decent job. Like, even a guy like
Christopher Sanchez.
Christopher Sanchez, has got some pretty good stuff. Not that Turnbull doesn't, but even like who came over from the Mets last year and is currently hurt, that Turnbull's taking his spot. Can't believe I can't think of this, but they've done a decent job with like veterans. That have come over to get the most out of them, despite the fact that it is a tough ballpark. And, you know, as the weather warms up, maybe there is some concern for Turnbull. And they've been pretty careful with him. Like, he's been able to go like five and six innings, but he has not thrown that many pitches. Like, maybe once he's like worn down a bit in the, in an actual outing where he has to throw 40 or 50 pitches in the first three or four innings rather than being through four or five at that point, it could be a different story for him. But
Taiwan Walker.
There you go. Yep. He wasn't great, but like he was serviceable for certain points last year. I think I think Hicks, I think Turnbull could be a little bit better than that. But I'd kind of Vargas rule it, as Nick Pollock would say, like ride it until sort of it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's never worked for a long period of time. I mean, in 2019, he had 148 innings, 146 Ks, which is nice, but that was with a 4.61 ERA. So even in like his best volume season, but you're right. I mean, eventually it seemed like it was starting to click in 2021. Not quite a strikeout per inning, but over 50 innings, he did have a sub 3 ERA before the TJ. So now he's back. I mean, it's great, of course, seeing him out there doing his thing, like cheering for him as he's coming up on like age 32. He's put in a shift, but right now it's got like he's got like a 192 BABIP, and he's a career like 300 BABIP guy. Left on base is high, but I do see your point, Steve, that like as long as we're not thinking that this is like the fab splash pick, like that's I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
To my rant at the start of the show, it's like I'm waiting for that next pitcher where everyone's kind of like, you know, 12 Ks and like go grab him. And I just don't know that Turnbull, given what we've seen, it might be a little deceptive. I do think he could be a little bit of a glue guy as like an SP6, but just not some, you know, not some fab buster. So I don't know. Any closing thoughts? Because I know I was pouring a little bit of cold water on it, but I do agree that given everything and the fact that he's got a 30% K percentage and just a like a 2% walk rate, like you can't sneeze at that. Along with the stuff plus, though.
Basically so anything, any subheader that we wanted to look for pitchers on this list, like how we sort of evaluate early season pitching, Turnbull stood out on it. Like stuff, roles, which we'll get into, and K minus BB, which is a good metric to use early on in the season. It's a good indicator of in season performance. Like your current K minus BB predicts how you're going to be for the rest of the season. Well, same with stuff plus. That's what those two metrics do well. They're good short term indicators, and they're both good for Turnbull. So I'm pretty in on it.
Yeah, Turnbull with a 112 stuff plus, and again 100 is like league average. So promising there. Our last one that we wanted to discuss was Nick Martinez, right, Steve?
And
I'm on real time. I don't know if I have my settings wrong on qualified, but I'm not seeing him on the stuff.
Yeah, I got him up. I think, okay. You know, once with guys going the third time, there's a few. There's the thing that stands out to me is he has a slider, a curveball, and a changeup that are all well above average at 140, 116, and 123 is respectively. 105 overall stuff plus, that's because all of his fastballs are pretty bad. And it's another one that you kind of have to hold your eyes and because it's Cincinnati. But there's been flashes with Nick Martinez that he's been decent. I know he moved back and forth between the bullpen and starting last year. He ended up only starting 9 games. But the year before that with the Padres, he was pretty good when he came over from Korea, I believe, and it was pretty exciting. He had 10 starts, 106 innings of a 3.47 ERA. Like over the last 2 years, it's been a 3.47 and a 3.43 ERA. It's been hurt in 2022 and to the bullpen in 2023. Now you have to deal with Cincinnati. But I still think there's a decent pitcher in here. With how good his secondaries are, it's a tough ask to have a really bad fastball in Cincinnati, especially. He struck out 19% of guys and only walked 4% so far in his 10 innings this year. So I think there could be something useful at the very least as a streamer away from Cincinnati for Nick Martinez here.
Yeah, this one is definitely like a more of a industry league, you know, NFBC pick or just the watch list. But right now all the ratios look pretty rough for Martinez. That said, I mean, you know, 200 plus innings with over those two seasons with a sub 3.5 ERA is interesting. So yeah, his next start is actually, as you guys listen to this on the podcast, it's Thursday night or during the day. He's got the Brewers, so that'll be a good one.
Brewers
will
be pretty hot in Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati,
I would not have the guts.
Not streaming that one.
No.
Okay. All right. Yeah, they've got some swing and miss too, though. So maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
that's true. That's true. Yelich is crushing the ball though. Trujillo looks pretty good. So.
Mm-hmm.
He's available in my home league, and I have a free roster spot, and I have not added him. And I'm low on starts this week, so that's going to tell you something.
Yeah, that'll tell you something.
He'll go out and shove, like somebody else will add him, and he'll do good probably. But yeah.
All right. Well, we are jumping to K minus BB leaders, but we got to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back. Okay, Steve, we're back, but we are actually taking a quick detour for our listener question here. It is TJ, loyal listener. You guys can follow him on X at Profit of Peoria. Always throwing out some fire bets there as well. Maybe we'll have a Masters special for you with like 25 legs or something. That's a TJ special. But TJ asks us, is Ezekiel Tovar the real deal or Fugazi? And Steve, I feel like we've gotten a question like this from TJ in the past, asking if Araki is real. Now, Tovar, I think this one was a sneaky shortstop parachute play. From last year, we saw a little bit of the power speed. We saw the average at 253 for the season line. We know that in Coors, we're always, it doesn't take much to convince us, but so far it's looked great for Tovar, where he's got a 938 OPS, a 333 batting average. The plate discipline is never as good as I want it to be. But the barrel rate at a 13.3% is a much better, I guess, just power outlook than where he was at last year with 8.1% and 15 home runs in 153 games. So if that power tool can develop for just a 22-year-old in Coors, now you start squinting and saying, is this a 25-20 guy who, if the BABIP falls his way, could hit 280? I'm excited about Tovar in most leagues. Want to hear your two cents, but for his prospect pedigree and his start to the season and even how good he looked last year, I know it was just like 15-11, but for a 21-year-old, it was a productive fantasy season. So I do think Tovar is the real deal. It's just how high is that ceiling? What are your thoughts?
I think that the hate on Tovar, just due to the type of player that he is, went a little too far. Like, people were pretty excited about Tovar as a prospect coming up. I know that he had a lot of hype, and sure, a lot of that has to do with him being a prospect for Colorado, and like, if anyone could hit a lick and they play half their games in Colorado, people get more excited about them maybe than they should be. But you know, in back-to-back years in Double A and Triple in Double A and Triple A in 2022, he had a 153 WRC plus in Double A and a 120 WRC plus in Triple A. Most of that came in 66 games in Double A, where he had 13 homers, stole 17 bases, and like, people were super excited about him. He didn't strike out that much, only 8. Like, he never struck out that much in the minors, never above 21.7%. And sure, it was a bit elevated last year, and people were more concerned about the fact that he basically just swung at everything. But there is a bit of improvement this year. His chase percentage went from 42%, which is bad, like bottom percentile of the league, bad. I think it was bottom 1% of the league. Yeah, 2 in 2023. And he's cut that down to, it's not great, but he's cut that by 5 percentage points. So he's swinging at much less pitches outside of the zone. 7 percentage points. The contact hasn't translated, but I don't think that's ever been an issue. Like, he has a decent hit tool, and that's why people were excited about him. So I think once his contact starts to go up, and he is making slightly better swing decisions, that could lead to, I think, more of a breakout than people might expect. I think that any analytically inclined analyst sort of just wrote off Tovar because of those horrible plate skills and the fact that, you know, he didn't walk that much. Like, he hit 253 with a 408 slug, but his OPS was still below 700 last year. Mm-hmm. That's really hard to do. That's because he had a 287 OBP. But even if he is able to walk, you know, 7% of the time or 6% of the time up from that 4% with swinging, with chasing less and the hit tool and decent pop that he has, I think he could be an underrated prospect and is sort of overlooked there because the Rockies are so bad that they're even streamable in cores this year. But I like the way that Tovar has looked at the plate so far this year is what I'm saying. I think it's – I don't know if it's like I need to roster this guy right now, but it's definitely someone that I'd be interested to have for Rockies home games. And I did last year, and I think he was rosterable for a lot of that last year. And it seems like there's slow and steady improvements, which is what you like to see from a player like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's at least worth holding until the wheels come off this season. But I would bet against it, and I think he does enough of the kind of the vanity stats to where it'll make up for some of those kind of colder weeks because, you know, they will be coming with that plate discipline. But other quick question we had was to cover this two shows running, the question on Logan Allen. And this is one that Steve, early on last season, I was thinking he would be pitching help for me. He was solid, and the surface stats looked good with the 381 ERA, but then you get to the whip of 140, and herein lies kind of the issues with Logan Allen. Is he's just very hittable, and even his walk rate is good, but when you've got a 91 and change fastball, 91 mile per hour fastball, and a sweeper that doesn't really strike out the universe. He's lost a little bit of spin on the sweeper, lost a bit of the velocity on it, and he's also lost swing and miss on it this season. He strikes me as kind of like a pitcher's pitcher, like from a bygone era in terms of like he knows what he's doing from a location standpoint, and I like watching him from like his tempo and everything. Like, he just seems like a sequencing pitcher. That said, I just don't think he has the stuff, you know, and his frame's not that big. I just worry he's way too hittable. And ultimately, yeah, you can stream him, but I don't see where this could be anything that I would ever feel comfortable rolling him out against like tough opponents or expecting a huge amount of upside on a per game basis. But it's a good name to bring up and appreciate the question from Joe in the chat, especially on a SP show. But Steve, your thoughts on Logan Allen? It's been a little bit since we talked about him midway through last year.
I still like Logan Allen. I think there's, I think it's similar to maybe not the upside of Tovar, but I think that there is a decent pitcher in there, and especially because he's in Cleveland, like. The underlying numbers for his start, I know he got rocked in his last one versus the White Sox, which is super disappointing. Like, you want a pitcher to do well versus an easy opponent, especially when Logan Allen did do pretty well versus the A's and the Mariners in his two starts before that. But I think he's been a bit unlucky. The swing strike rate is league average, despite the stuff average, the league average stuff, despite the below average stuff. The CSW is still decent. His ideal contact rate isn't horrible either. So despite having, you know, a fastball that sits low 90s, and doesn't have the amazing swing and miss stuff, guys still aren't squaring it up. So I think there is at least a decent back end streamer and decent starter here. Like your prototypical Toby that Nick Pollock likes to talk about. Just the guy that's around that, you know, you don't really care too much about, but I think he's a decent streamer. And someone that should get better results than he did, against the White Sox.
Okay. Well, that is Logan Allen, and our segue for Logan Allen is we're talking K minus BB. So for Logan Allen, his is 13.4 with a 19.4% K rate and a 6% walk rate so far this season. But the guys that are jumping off, Spencer Turnbull, who we talked about, a 31% strikeout rate and a 2% walk rate. But the next one that we want to spend more time on, Steve, is Michael Wacha, who's got a 30% or 31% K rate and a sub 5% walk rate. Man, here you go. Another former Cardinals pitcher that we're talking about here as we go through them. But Michael Wacha he picked on the White Sox, which is less impressive, but the 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, no earned runs. And then at Baltimore, he did strike out 5 in 5 innings. He avoided the loss, but run prevention, whip has been good for Wacha. And he's a guy who's kind of reinvented himself in the past 2 years. And Steve, you were talking about former Mets. I feel like that's, you know, when he left the Cardinals, he went to the Mets, had a stint with the Rays. But when he's kind of turned it around has been with the Red Sox, the Padres, and now with the Royals. What are we seeing here with Wacha in terms of pitch mix or just beneath the hood? What's unlocking this K-minus BB? Because he's another guy who the four-seam velocity isn't insane. And although he was exciting early on in his career, it's been a long time since we've taken him seriously as like a swing-and-miss guy. So talk to me about Wacha and how the heck he's got a 31% K rate.
I think an emphasis on throwing his best pitch more, which is his changeup. Like that sort of breakout happened once the changeup became his primary pitch, and he's throwing it basically just as much as his four seamer now. It's close, but you know he's still using it. He's thrown 54 four seamers, 52 changeups, so really really close. Essentially using the changeup as his primary pitch. And I think that's led to a really, really serviceable, overlooked starter. And I think that did happen in Tampa, that initial breakout after the shortened season with the Mets that he had. But it was only 124 innings. The ERA wasn't great, but the XFIP and Sierra were much better in Tampa. So the underlying numbers were there. Like it was a decent K-minus BB rate. Like he struck out 23% of the guys, walked only 6, and essentially been that 6%. He's essentially been that the last 2 years. Now there's a bump in strikeout rate, and there is a bump in swing strike rate too. So I don't think he's going to hold around 30%, but hey, maybe he can get to like 25 with his command or control that he doesn't walk guys. Like if he gets to a 25% strikeout rate, like that's not a back end starter. That's like a 3 or 4, like middle of your rotation fantasy guy, especially in that ballpark for someone that has had home run trouble in the past. Like I'm really, really liking Michael Wacha. Maybe as my favorite name that we've talked about so far, but I don't know how available he is in a lot of leagues. I feel like he was drafted in most.
He was deep, 61% rostered in Yahoo League. So probably available in 12 teams.
Yeah,
You know, that's surprising. That should be
higher. That should be much higher.
I agree. And this is
he's got the Mets and the White Sox coming up for his next 2 starts.
He could feast, man. We cite Lance Brozdowski a lot on here. Fantastic Twitter follow at Lance Broz, B-R-O-Z. But Lance has a tweet from December where he said, Wacha threw the greatest changeup ever. Exaggeration, maybe, last season in a completely irrelevant game. Calls it, he says, literal screwball, hurts my brain. And yeah, you can scroll down the timeline and there's like, you know, Pitching Ninja just making hitters look silly, all with the changeup. So I think I've completely overlooked how nasty this changeup is. And the fact that it's got, like, on Savant, a 46% whiff rate this year, which
crazy.
Is up even higher than the 36. Like, that starts to get to, like, DeGromian territory when you're up in the 50s on a whiff percentage. So, Yeah, man. I mean, now he's throwing it, like, how much did you say? It's 31% of the time, so the second most used pitch.
It's two more. He started two more fastballs, but, like, last year he threw 766 changeups and 639 fastballs. So he's not afraid to use that as his primary pitch.
Yep. As we're talking through it, this one definitely feels of the bunch that we've talked about. I'm with you, Steve, that, like, and of course, you know, he's 61% rostered, so you got
to
fall.
I mean, even as like a trade target, right? Like, is Michael Wacha going to be that hard to get in a trade? Like, if you lost Spencer Strider, right? Like, I don't know, trade your third outfield for him or something. I don't know.
Yep. And we're not saying here that Michael Wacha is Spencer Strider, but there is plenty to like, and you might want to do it before those next two starts, to your point, Steve, because
absolutely
we could be seeing a late breakout here. So that is Wacha. Moving to another K-minus BB leader, it's Ranger Suarez with a 26.8% K rate, which is very nice for Ranger because he's always been a nice command pitcher. The walk rate is at 2.4% to start the season. Of course, that'll come back a little bit, but having a K rate over 25% is nice to see for Ranger. That's been against the Braves as well, and then at Washington. But the strikeouts came against the Braves, not Washington. So thinking about Ranger Suarez, this is a name we've talked about a ton on Wins Above Fantasy over the years, Steve. But yeah, this season, it's starting to look a little bit better on the swing and miss stuff. You know, the ground ball rate is going to be nice. You know, the walk rate is going to be nice. So we saw like an okay Ranger last year, but do you think that there's still a, I don't know, like an SP4 in this profile for just a 28-year-old? What do you think of Ranger Suarez?
Yeah, I think there's probably somewhere in between like what we've seen so far this year as far as the underlying numbers. And then we're in between, you know, 2021 or 2022 and 2023, 2022 when he was, you know, really amazing. Good across 155 innings. And then last year where he was, you know, pretty disappointing as like kind of like a guy that people liked late in drafts, you know, despite some of the concerns about the stuff. I'm not as excited about Wacha, mainly because of like tiebreaker things like the ballpark, pitching in Philadelphia versus Kansas City. I think Waka's stuff is a little bit better. But like, this is Michael Wacha at home, kind of, I think, you know. If Wacha isn't available or isn't on your wire or not available for trade, maybe Suarez is. Although on Fantrax, he's rostered, I think, in more leagues, surprisingly, than Wacha. So I like it. I think that it's a very similar profile, maybe with like a little bit less control, a little bit more walks, probably a little bit more homers and a worse ERA because of the ballpark, but not a bad consolation prize to Wacha in my mind.
Yeah, it is a good changeup. The difference is he doesn't throw it as often. But yeah, talking about whiff
maybe
rate,
you should
his
start
changeups
doing that a little more. Yeah,
yeah, changeups at 44%. So on whiff rate. So yeah, that's another good one there. And like you said, I would still lean Wacha. And Yahoo though, Ranger is down at 36%. So,
okay, so
quite
it's
a bit
different
low.
In Yahoo. Okay, yeah, so he's more available there. Yeah.
Another guy we wanted to talk about is Luis Severino, who is rostered in between the two at 43%, coming off striking out 7 at Cincinnati and had 6 strikeouts in 5 innings against Milwaukee to open the season. So don't look now, but Severino, who was kind of a, I won't say a popular sleeper, but he was thrown out. Some people were kind of in and saying Severino could do this. 27% K rate so far and a 4.2% walk rate. Steve, out your way, what's your take on Luis Severino? Do you think that there's a possible bounce back happening here with the Mets?
I think so. Nick Pollock has been very, very concerned about the fastball shape and just how it isn't what it was when Severino was like a budding young ace with
six
the Yankees
ago.
Like 6 years ago, but the velocity's back, But, you know, there's still some things to be concerned about. I think that it's maybe a little bit too early to say that this is the finished Severino project. Like,
yeah,
he's gone through so much over the last few years as far as injuries and working to get back. And I understand that, like, you know, things that Lick looks like the vertical approach angle, the heart is bad at -4.8. That's 45th percentile on it. The horizontal, the height adjusted VAA, like, so when you adjust for height, is 40th percentile. So stuff that used to be really, really good for Severino. The IVB on it, the vertical movement, is at 15.1. So that's like middling. Like really good fastballs have like 16, like 18 to 19 IVB. So he used to have these things, and that's what made him really good. But he does have the velocity back. It's at 96.1. That's 88th percentile in the league. But like looking back at, we don't have the data, but you know, in 2021, he had 17 IVB, 16.7 in 2022, 15.4 last year, and 50. So it's just like gone down, the IVB, like the way that the fastball approaches the zone and the ride on it essentially has just been gone. And that's something even before like IVB was a thing, that everyone tracked and followed and had on their player pages. Like you saw the ride on Severino's fastball, like the thing like popped, right? It may not have that anymore, but maybe as he gets more comfortable with the Mets, maybe it'll start to come back. He'll make a few mechanical adjustments. The velocity's there, and he has looked better over the last few starts, or last one start versus the disaster that was his first one. It is the Braves today, Thursday, as you're listening to this, so that's a little scary. But hey, if he shoves, he's probably going to be picked up because that'll be two tough matchups in a row that he'll have done well at.
Yeah, I think one thing to also kind of throw in the hat for the pro Severino here is it's the most extension he's ever got in his career on his pitching. So across a series of pitches, it's always a good thing when you're getting extension.
What's your number on that? Because I have him at 6.4, and that's 29th percentile in the league.
So it's year over year is what okay. I'm looking at. So he's always been at like a 6.2. Now it's up to 6.4.
Yep. Yep.
The changeup is up at 6.7, which is really getting up there. Mm-hmm. So the changeup, let's see if it's helping with. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't throw it that often either.
Yeah, 7%.
But yeah, I mean, that's just something that looks different when you look at year over year, because so far he's getting results that even last year where he had some of the velo, you know, is we also saw a 6.65 ERA. So even with the velocity, the wheels could come off here. I don't know. Where would you put Severino with some of the other names we've talked about, and Waka?
He has good swing and miss stuff on. The shapes of the fastball and the sinker aren't great, but he gets a ton of whiffs on it. He's got a 89th percentile swing strike on the fastball, 88th percentile swing and strike on the sinker. You know, the secondaries aren't great, but like as far as swing and miss, but the changeup does get whiffs. Like
the ground ball rate.
There's a lot of outs here for Severino, I think, despite. You know, poor pitch shapes. If he has the velocity and could pitch, and the command that he used to have, I think there could be something that's being overlooked here.
Yeah, and the Mets are better with pitchers than the Yankees, right?
Yeah,
I mean that's safe to say.
Yeah. I don't know if I fully agree with that. Like,
really?
Maybe the Yankees are. Yeah, at least like as far as like developing guys, right? Like you have like Michael King, Clark Schmidt, like Nestor Cortez, like even Severino sort of wasn't like this amazing top prospect that they kind of developed right a few years ago. You know,
I think health aside, that's a side topic. Maybe that's a podcast episode for another day. But yeah, we'll see what they do with Severino. Moving to the last one we have in the K-BB is Zach Littell. And Steve, I believe you have some shares of Littell. That was one of your Rays this year that you were looking at. Yeah, I mean, basically with any Ray, they've got our attention in draft season, but Littell's got 15 strikeouts and 15 innings, just a 1.17 ERA. The walk rate has been reasonable, 4.8%, like I said. And Littell is a guy that, I mean, slider heavy, slider first as his pitch. Another guy who throws a splitter, 28 years old. And we have yet to see Littell have like a breakout. I mean, the most we've seen him throw was in last year. He had 87 innings with a 3.93 and a 1.15 whip. But so far, so good. Is this the Rays breakout when everyone else was looking at some other ones? What are your thoughts here for Littell?
Maybe. It's like, how do the Rays keep getting away with this, you know? They just keep on finding guys like this. Like, I know it's early, but the StatCast sliders are out for 2024, and there is just a lot of red on Zach Littell's page. I believe this doesn't count his start today where he was just okay versus the Angels. He went like 4 1/3, gave up a run, walk, struck out 4, walk 3, so nothing too special. But, you know, just really good limits of quality of contact, which I know isn't the most predictable thing for pitchers, despite the middling whiff chase rates. There is a decent strikeout rate, good walk rate. So it just seems like something that the Rays are going to squeeze the most out of. We could agree that the Rays are better than the Mets.
Than both. And
yeah.
Yes.
But, I mean, yeah, he's – and looking at Savant page, like the location blobs, if that's what you want to call them, like for the slider he throws the most, like – I've never seen anything like this. It's like up in the zone. Like he is like spotting the slider Weird. Up. There's nothing down. It's super, super strange. Like who would like, of course the Rays found a guy that throws like high sliders that are good.
Makes it
just
work.
Makes yeah. absolutely no sense. But another guy that I think is probably worth at least streaming. If not holding for more, if you're trying to replace some of these injured guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's in the same kind of roster range as the other ones. So I think, again, when you
So what are we talking about? Like 60 to 70% in Yahoo leagues? Or
he's lower, 47% in Yahoo leagues. So
there's a chance that these guys are out there then. Yeah.
Yeah. I think definitely in 12-teamers, 14 and higher, it gets – a little bit less likely, but for these, I think I would probably go Steve Waka, and then it's honestly pretty tight between I think Severino, Littell, and then I think Ranger. I've got at the bottom of this foursome. But what are your thoughts?
Okay, so Turnbull we had separately. I don't know if I want to group him in with them. I think I would go Waka, Severino, Littell. Suarez.
I could get on board with that because we've seen that ceiling with Severino as well. So yeah, I like that a lot. Okay. Well, we've got some velo gainers next along with that topic we were talking about with Severino. Velo gainers and then some guys who have some interesting role opportunities and closing the show, just rattling off some streamers. But we got to take our second ad break and we'll be right back. All right. So Steve, just looking at velocity gainers, and I don't know if you want to add any context to this, but of course, it's a little bit gloomier in light of all the injuries, but it goes without saying that velo is such a quick indicator to a lot of the stuff we love in fantasy and strikeouts. So this was at least pulled from velocity readings last year to this year, and then just a simple leaderboard on who had the biggest jumps from last year to this year. But anything you want to add before we jump into some of these names?
No, it's just funny. It's like, what hurt these guys? Velocity. What are we looking for in guys that we want to replace them with? Velocity.
Yep. And that's the problem, man. That is the problem that we're looking at. But Ryan Nelson for the D-backs is kind of a name that's been on the breakout board for a while, but he just hasn't put it all together. Opening day, he got pummeled, or his opening outing. Was he opening day starter for
I don't believe the D-backs? So.
I don't think so. I think that's a typo. No. So his first outing for the Diamondbacks against the Yankees, he got pummeled. But then he looked a little bit better against the Braves. He gave up a couple homers and a third earned run, but seven strikeouts in five innings. And that was kind of what got our attention because
no walks, too.
No walks that day. That's right. And that's for Ryan Nelson, just 3% rostered in Yahoo. His fastball velo has the fifth highest jump of everyone from last year to this year among starters. So, and it's kind of in that critical area where I think it's like 92 and change up to 94 and change, where like at that point, your fastball becomes a lot less hittable. He's got the Cardinals on Saturday. This is one, Steve. I actually added him in TGFBI, I think after week one.
Nice.
But I'm happy now because he looked better against the Braves. And I think if he has a good outing against the Cardinals, especially in this pitching landscape, we could see that 3% jump up to like 30% plus. So this might be one to watch really closely because he's kind of been on that breakout buzz for a couple of years now.
Yeah, I had a ton of Ryan Nelson going into last year. It never really worked out. But for a guy that throws his fastball 50% of the time, that velocity jump is huge because it goes from like slightly below average at 94 to above. I have on Savant, he was averaging 94 last year to 95 this year, so might be slightly different. I think you had the fan graphs there, right, Van? Might be a little different.
Honestly, I might have been mixing somebody up on the board.
Maybe,
it's still
a big gain, and especially for a pitch that he throws 50% of the time. And what's interesting is that he has three other pitches that he throws above 13% of the time, all of which that he gets good whiffs on, or at least average on, in the slider, cutter, and changeup. So there's options for him, despite there's not being like a clear put away pitch that he goes through to the clear second most of the time. But there are three options that he's able to do, and he throws the slider to both lefties and he throws the cutter to both lefties and righties. He has the changeup for lefties, the slider for righties. Like, there is a plan here for Ryan Nelson that I think could work. With these options and pitches that he has, if he's comfortable with it, adding this velocity on the fastball that, you know, is decent. I'll look up the pitch shape numbers here quickly as you talk about this. But I think Ryan Nelson is an exciting name.
Yeah, I'm on Savant year to year changes.
Okay.
And it says 92.6 to 94.4, but I don't know if maybe I'm looking at the wrong.
Maybe from 22 to 23, that was 94.4, I think, may have been last year. But yeah, I mean, it's an 18.1 IVB, which is 92nd percentile. 1.1 HAVAA, so the horizontal, the height adjusted vertical approach angle, at 67%. It's got a POV of 79 on the fastball, 7 extension, which is 79th percentile.
Yeah,
like it's good. The slider has some good numbers too, as far as break. The velocity is a little bit slow, but the cutter's hard at 91. The changeup, you know, seems decent enough. And then a curveball that he mixes in doesn't really throw much. But I think that there's that Ryan Nelson is a name that I would want to grab if I'm looking for any sort of pitching. I want to look at his matchups too coming up. He's got the Cardinals on the 13th, so on Saturday, I believe that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Giants. So hold on to him for the, and that's at San Francisco too. So some good starts coming up. I think there may be some interesting Ryan Nelson numbers that are put up based on his underlying metrics. here.
I think so. And then the so Ryan Nelson, yeah, again, we had him as the fifth highest jump on Velo Gainers. And then Clark Schmidt was actually number 9 on that same board. And Clark Schmidt just rostered 18% of leagues. Now, a bit of a meh start to the season with a couple starts, 10 innings, 9 strikeouts, a 4.66 ERA and a 1.66 whip. But that was against the Blue Jays and at Houston. He gets Cleveland on Friday, which maybe we'll see Clark Schmidt kind of open up a little bit. I know this has been another guy that we've kind of been hoping and wish casting a little bit with the swing and miss stuff he has. It's tempting, right? And he's got a good cutter that gets some swing and miss. The velocity moving up is promising. And yeah, it's a guy who, again, age 28, if it all clicked, it wouldn't be shocking. And this is a time when we need pitching help. So yeah, I think Clark Schmidt is another good one of the two. I think despite the roster ownerships, I'm a little bit more excited about Ryan Nelson.
Me too.
But yeah, what your thoughts on Clark Schmidt?
I've always liked Clark Schmidt. I think he's a bit of an underappreciated back end starter for fantasy. I know the ERAs have been in the mid fours, and there were some times where he looked like he was breaking out and never really put it together. But I think it's just a matter of time with Schmidt, especially last year with the introduction of the cutter. He's throwing that cutter more and harder. He's throwing the sinker more and harder. There's less sweeper use, but it's not necessarily an amazing pitch, but it's still, at least results wise, but it still gets decent swing and miss, and he does have other options in the curveball and a changeup that he does mix into righties a little bit, to lefties. But the tools are there for Clark Schmidt, and the fact that he's throwing harder makes me want to be in even a little more.
Yep. So, yeah, some other fastball velo gainers are Jack Flaherty, Ryan Weathers, and, again, Luis Severino. So food for thought there. But one I wanted to call out was breaking ball velocity gainer was Steven Matz. And this is one that's just 7% rostered. There were times last year that he looked like he was really putting it together, and then he got injured. So he's almost picking up where he left off. The one caveat is he's had a couple really good starts this season, sub-2 ERA, a 1.16 whip, but the strikeouts have not been there this season. That said, his secondaries have risen in velo from 80 to 85 miles per hour, and he's got a curve and a slider that he's comfortable using when he needs to. Matz is interesting, man. I think we've seen moments of him looking like he could break out, and his next games are the D-backs on Friday, but then he gets at Oakland next week. So it could be one in terms of that stream and see what happens category, where, yeah, if he can add some of the Ks that he had last year, so far the ratios have looked insane. And honestly, if you put it all together, I know it's not really fair to do this, but like his last 7 starts, he looks like an ace when you put all the numbers together. It's just you're kind of bridging last year to this year, and there's an injury in between. But for just 7% rostered and like a desperate time like this, I think Steven Matz is worth a note there.
Yeah, I think maybe that might have been last year. He threw the slider 88 last year, and it's 88 again this year. But he is throwing it a bit more, which is encouraging. And the sinker velocity has gone up half a tick too. I'm with you on Matz. I think there are some good names here, man. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel, but I think I'd probably go Nelson, Matz, Schmidt in that order, maybe Nelson, Schmidt, Matz. But that being said, it's been an impressive run for Matz. If you count in the last few starts of last year, so it's interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah. So those three all good
names
to look at.
Yeah, he didn't give up. He didn't get up more than 2 earned runs and struck out 5 or more guys in 4 of his last 5 starts. And the start that he only struck out 2, he went 6 innings with just 4 hits and no walks. So it was really good towards the end of last year before he got hurt. So maybe he's carrying it over a bit.
Yeah, I mean, until proven otherwise. But yeah, the K percentage is what needs to rise up.
Because, yeah, it's been so only far, six strikeouts in 10 innings. But I want to see the whiffs that he's getting. It's 11.4% swing strike rate, so I would expect that number to go up. That does not match a 14. 11.4% swing strike rate does not match a 14.6% K percentage.
No, not at all. So yeah, I would have him in that same order of Nelson, Matz, and then Schmidt. But I think you convinced me.
Convinced me there.
Well, Steve, I know we're running long here. We could rattle through week three matchups.
Yeah.
I was just going to throw out that week three, you got some two starters with AJ Puck. I know it hasn't looked great, but if you're real desperate, he's got the Giants and then at the Cubs, and AJ Puck is now just 27% rostered. Seth Lugo is another one that 31% rostered. He goes at the White Sox. It is the Orioles at home after that. Lance Lynn is somewhat of an interesting one with a nice little 30% K rate, 5% walk rate, and he goes at Oakland next, and he's 28% rostered. And then Jordan Wicks is another one who's got a pretty good K minus BB, although he's at the Diamondbacks. But I want to close out, Steve, and let you talk about Cody Bradford, because this one seems kind of relevant with what's going on tonight, right?
Yeah, he shoved again. 6.2 innings pitched, 5 hits, 7 Ks, 1 walk, 36% CSW. He got the gallows pull with 17 whiffs, so he had the most whiffs on the night. This is someone that I'm regretting not rostering or not adding like right away in my home league, just because, you know, it was like, hey, I don't know how long he's going to be in the rotation.
Right.
I did have him in, I believe I had him in a few NFBC leagues. And it was another one that was like close to dropping. But at the very least, I think this is a Vargas rule. It hasn't been the greatest opponents. I mean, it was the Cubs, then Houston, which was really good. He went 7 2/3 and 4 strikeouts, no walks, 1 run. And then Oakland tonight. But it's Detroit next if he's still in a rotation. Like, I think that Andrew Heaney is going to go to the bullpen. The Rangers are a good organization. I don't think they're going to do this. So I think Cody, you know, I don't think they'd be someone that would just blindly remove him
send
from
him
his
down.
Role without set him down. He is tied with Yamamoto for my most rostered pitchers in NFBC. So I have him on three teams.
Very nice.
I have him in TGFBI, Turf, and On the Wire. And I believe I drafted him in all of those. I think he was a super deep sleeper by Eno Saris. So don't know why I didn't do this in my home league, but oh well.
Yeah, nice change up as well.
Yeah,
that's kind of been
a
theme,
really nice
theme of the show.
And I think he's added some velocity too, if I'm correct there. I'll look it up real quick. But we sort of buried the lead here, but Cody Bradford would be a name that I'm sure is going to be very, very popular in Fab this weekend if he wasn't already last year. It's the velocity is the same. Yep. It's low 90. It's 90 poo. It's 90.3 last year, 90.6 this year. So, and the swing strike rate's at just 10%. But I mean, it's more of like the command, right? If he's going to strike out 23% of the guys, that's fine. But it's really good if he's only walking 2.3. There will be some homer regression. But I mean, he's still got a low left on base percentage. And I think that there is, a decent pitcher in here.
There's gotta be some, there's gotta be some deception for how good all the even like expected ERA indicators and everything, but he's not a high ground ball guy. He doesn't get a huge amount of swing and miss stuff. The extension is good, but the velocity is not. And it looks like he's got a good changeup. But
yeah, he does have a good changeup. Yeah,
for him to be as good as he's been, it does seem like a sell high candidate if someone would ever bite.
A really good curveball too that he uses 15% of the time. Like he gets called strikes with batters chase it outside the zone a lot. Does throw it for strikes. So, despite the middling well below average fastball velocity, it's in the ninth percentile at 90.6. That's crazy, right? Like if you throw 90 as a starter, you're in the bottom 10% of the league. As far as fastball velocity, right. Kind of to go with our theme there, but it doesn't give up super hard contact, right? He locates it decently high in the zone. If you're doing it with your fastball, your changeup's going to play up too, and it's one of those things. If he has that deception and a good arm speed with this changeup, it doesn't really matter if he's throwing 90. If the guys think it's 90 and it's a changeup that's going 83, it's going to be a tough time for them. So I think it's super interesting what the Rangers have here in Cody Bradford.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good one to watch. He's 61% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Like you said, Steve, it's after tonight, it's going to be, almost universal.
Yeah. I mean, sure. I'm sure that number this morning was low, right? Because people added him for that stream. But now guys are just gonna hold him.
Yep. He's gone from 10% to 61% in the past couple days. So
crazy.
That's if run and grab him, see what you got with Cody Bradford. But that does wrap us up, guys. Again, hopefully you've not been bit by the injury bug, but here are some names that are at least worth watching closely. We talked about Keaton Wynn, Jordan Hicks, Spencer Turnbull was a good one on there. Waka was a standout, Steve. Suarez, Severino, Littell, Ryan Nelson, another one we like to watch there. Clark Schmidt, Steven Matz, maybe some sneaky intrigue there.
We got a lot of names to cover for a lot of injuries. This is probably one of the shows that we've gone through the most names in an hour and 17 minutes.
Yeah.
But with all these injuries that have gone on, I think it was worth it. So
it's worth it for sure.
Sorry. There definitely should be someone that's on your wire or someone that you can go out and trade and target for a trade. I might go throw a Ryan Nelson trade offer out there.
I know. I like that one too. So, okay, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next Thursday and Wednesday night. You guys can check out on Twitter. We'll do the live streams throughout the season. But thank you guys for joining us. As always, follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I am at @Van_verified. Steve is at @Stav8818. But that wraps us up for episode 134. Talking pitchers on the waiver wire to help us with injuries. Thank you guys for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.